On this week's episode, we talk about stuff that I've watched on TV this week, including Man Down splitting up together in the WWE. Then we talk about Jesus Christ Superstar and Jesus Christ in general for a long time. Before the cock crows, you will deny that you listened to this episode at least three times. I'm your host, Derek Brink, and you are listening to Empty Checking. Hi there, thanks for listening to Empty Checking, the show that sometimes just starts talking and sees what comes out. If you like the show, check out the companion blog at emptychecking.blogspot.com. There are usually some photos of the stuff I'm talking about there and some additional information. The show itself is hosted at soundcloud.com/emptychecking. We're findable on iTunes in the podcast section. If you start typing Empty Checking with Derek Brink, we pop right up. If you'd like to know more about me, go to derekbrink.com. There's lots of info and stuff to click on there. Or if you really like the music you hear throughout the show, it's all stuff I wrote and it's all available for absolutely free at derekbrink.bandcamp.com. I don't even collect your email address. This week's show is going to be kind of an interesting one. I've only got a couple of topics written down, so we'll see how this goes. This might be a short one, or it might be one of the longest like tirades I've ever gone on and be deeply personally revealing, and I might name names. It's hard to know what's going to come out on this one because I have virtually no outline. It's been kind of a weird week for me. I've been just stressed out with some stuff, it's nothing major, just your usual run-of-the-mill nonsense. Been a little bit stressed out, been a little bit tired, been a little bit grumpy. Haven't really been buying new stuff or listening to stuff that is worth talking about that I haven't already talked about before. So this week's kind of a different situation than where we normally find ourselves. Still wanted to do it, though. Still wanted to do the show because I've got at least one major thing that I did want to talk about. So I'm going to talk about that, and I'm going to hopefully riff off of that into some other stuff. So you'll see what happens when it happens. I look forward to finding out with you exactly what I end up saying this week, because I usually do this thing a little bit off the cuff, but I'm less prepared than usual this week, I'll be honest with you. Just kind of been a rough one. I hope your week's been better. Hope you all got some rest and relaxation over the Easter holiday and whatnot. If you're one of our Jewish friends, you're probably celebrating Passover still. I believe that goes through. I believe the eighth day is Saturday. So happy Passover to my Jewish friends out there. I've failed to say that up to this point. My apologies. But hope everyone's gotten a little bit of rest and relaxation in there, or if not, you're filling yourself with good feelings from things in some way or another. I'm trying to do that myself as well. Like I said, been kind of a rough week, but there's still plenty out there to smile about and plenty of stuff out there to be entertained by, and so we're going to give that a shot. This is a much shorter intro than usual, but that's where we are. So here's a little bit of music, and then we'll come back and talk about some stuff. This week's show, I've got mainly TV stuff to talk about, so we're gonna spend some time just talking about TV stuff, and I don't even really have a lot of music to talk about, because the music that I've been listening to is kind of informed by some of what my watching has been, and that'll kind of get clearer as the show goes on. You'll sort of see what I mean by that. I've been watching kind of a weird assortment of stuff, and there's stuff coming up that I'm looking forward to that even makes it weirder. over the weekend, one of the things I watched sort of in its entirety and almost a sitting, because I ended up really enjoying it and I was really excited to see it, is on Netflix, One of my gripes about Netflix is that there hasn't been a whole lot of British programming on there. It's lacking a little bit in some of its British sitcoms and stuff like that. They did add one that I'd been wanting to see and wanting to experience, and that's a show called Man Down, which is by Greg Davis, who's the main character on the show. It's essentially a not really a fish out of water story, sort of a fish in too much water story in some ways, because it's a guy who still lives in the same town, is a teacher but doesn't really want to be. It's just what he does. He still lives with his parents, even though he's in his 40s, and his life's just kind of stalled, and it's sort of his misadventures. And that appeals to me for a few reasons, but one of the things that made me really want to watch it is that I became aware that it's one of the last projects that Rick Mayall worked on. Rick Mayall, best known perhaps as the Rick character from the Young Ones British series in the 80s, which is iconic to anyone who's a fan of British comedies. It's one of my favorite just goofy screwball British comedies. I watch the whole of the Young Ones series probably about yearly. I just love that show, and I grew up watching that show. I was like 9 years old watching The Young Ones, which is not appropriate, but I was doing it. It was a lot of fun. Rick also, in the States, perhaps best known for his role, the titular role in the movie Drop Dead Fred. I love that movie. It's very Rick Mayall in its presentation. It feels like, I don't know if he had a hand in writing it, but it feels like he did. He certainly brought 100% of Rick Mayall to that character. And Rick Mayall died a few years ago, died too young after some medical problems. He'd had a series of medical problems that are, you can look on his Wikipedia for that, but he died way too young, and it was sad. And I'm a huge Rick Mayall fan, and I was heartbroken to hear that he had died so young. And Man Down is one of the last things that he worked on. He plays the father character on that show. He plays Greg Davis's father, and the father is very Rick Mayall too. He's nuts, and he keeps jumping out from different places and just kind of attacking Greg Davis's character and just sort of wrestling with him and stuff. And the show handled Rick's death very sweetly in its way. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. I wanted to watch the show because of Rick Mayall, and also because I've seen Greg Davis on the Graham Norton show several times, and I've always found him entertaining, so I wanted to see the thing that he's doing, you know? And so Man Down is finally on Netflix, and I watched it. And like I said, I made it through all of it this past weekend. I just sat there and kept watching it virtually in a sitting. I watched the whole series, and actually two sittings, Saturday and Sunday. But I watched the whole series. I didn't have a lot to do this weekend. And it's a British series, so it's six episodes in a series, and they're half-hour episodes, so it wasn't a huge time commitment. It's not like I stayed up, I got up at 5 in the morning and stayed up until 3 in the morning just watching Man Down. Nothing like that. It's, you know, a few hours out of your day to watch a couple of series. So I just sat and watched it and enjoyed it, and I liked the kind of character arcs involved, and I hope they're going to do further seasons. The last season ended in 2017 there, and I thought it was really funny. It made me laugh in a whole bunch of places, and it's one of those shows, though, that doesn't have a studio audience. There's no laugh track, so sometimes the jokes that are supposed to be funny come across a little bit more sad because it's a guy in just sort of a sticky situation, and it reads more like, oh, poor guy, rather than, ha, look what happened to him this time. You know, so there is a weird balance there without a laugh track. It's sometimes American audiences are stupid. Sometimes we need to be told when to laugh, and that I think that would have actually benefited the show a little bit. But there would also just be no way to film that show with an audience. So it was, I totally get it. But so a lot of fun, and it made me laugh a lot, and Rick's character made me laugh a lot, and now I'm ready to talk about him dying. When he passed away, Greg Davis has said that he had the next season of the show written, and he just had to go in and rewrite and take Rick out, and they handled it very sweetly in that they did have the father character pass away on the show, off-screen, of course. And Greg Davis's character went to find his aunt, his dad's sister, to tell her about it, and she, in her way, just kind of quickly confirmed, "So he's dead, is he? Right?" You know, and just sort of moved on as though it was no big deal. Just like, fine, expected it, you know, and kind of moved on and became part of the family. So he sort of brought in a character to fill that void, but dealt with the fact that his father had passed away. And there was a very sweet line of dialogue in that special episode where the son character was talking about how his father kept tormenting him and always jumping out of things and making fun of him and pushing him and things. And his best friend said to him, "Well, you know that why he did that, don't you? He did that because he thought you guys were best friends and he finally had someone he could joke around with." And that was just very sweet. And it was just sort of a nice moment in the show. And in subsequent seasons, a couple of times, the son character goes to visit the father's grave, and it's a very sweet dynamic at that point. And it's kind of a beautiful honoring of Rick Mayall's passing, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. If you've seen Man Down pop up on your Netflix shows queue thing and you've wondered about it, go ahead and watch it. If you've got small kids in the room, make sure that they're not in the room. They unfilteredly use the F word in that show, so be aware of that. But it's a show I really enjoyed, and I probably would have enjoyed it even without Rick Mayall's involvement, but boy am I glad he was there. It was nice to see Rick again. I've missed Rick. So Man Down is an A+ in my book. Otherwise, on TV, I continued watching Splitting Up Together, Jenna Fischer's new show, and this past week was a much stronger episode even than the premiere, and I enjoyed it quite a bit and got a few good laughs out of it. It's a show that's obviously geared more toward women, but when has that ever stopped me from watching a show? I've watched Lifetime movies in the past, folks, because James Patrick Stewart was cast in one, so I watched it. It was a terrible experience, but I watched it. Splitting Up Together is a fun experience. I got a lot of laughs out of it. This past episode was really good. So that was Tuesday. I watched that, I guess. We got Deadliest Catch coming up soon, which is kind of interesting because I DVR a lot of stuff on Tuesdays, and Deadliest Catch is on Tuesdays. And I'm DVRing Deadliest Catch, I'm DVRing Splitting Up Together, I'm trying to watch SmackDown as well on Tuesdays, so it's getting crowded on the old cable box, but looking forward to Deadliest Catch coming back. They did a couple of special episodes this past week, just sort of talking to the captains, getting ready to go back out on the seas, and I've been watching this show so long, it kind of feels like I know those guys, which is, you know, stupid because I don't know those guys. But I am a huge fan of that show, and I'm looking forward to that starting up again. I'll probably talk about it more when it comes. We're not there yet. I believe it's next week is the premiere episode. So I'm looking forward to watching Deadliest Catch again. That's always a good time. And really the only other thing I've been watching on TV, other than the main thing that I'm about to talk about, is that I've been watching wrestling, of course, where heading into WrestleMania. For those who don't like the wrestling talk, I promise this is going to be short. We're heading into WrestleMania, and usually heading into the biggest pay-per-view of the year, you'd have some really good shows leading up to it. But I've got to say that this past week, both shows were kind of just shows. They were sort of a letdown for the go-home shows going into the pay-per-view. Raw was particularly just an episode of Raw. I mean, there were entertaining moments. I liked Braun Strowman coming out and then going to the back to get his tag team partner and coming back out in a button-down shirt with glasses on, claiming to be Brains Strowman. I thought that was really funny. And I thought Corey Graves did a great job with that. As Brains Strowman is walking down to the ring, he's talking about, "Wow, where could he have found this guy? It must be his twin brother, right?" And then Braun gets into the ring and takes off his glasses, and Corey just, "Oh my God, it's Braun Strowman!" That was really funny. That was a line worthy of Bobby Heenan, I gotta say. Corey Graves is a fantastic commentator. I'm glad he's doing that job. He's fantastic in that role. I think I just said fantastic twice in a row. Sorry about that. There could probably be an empty checking drinking game based around how often I say the word fantastic. Please don't do that. I can't be held legally responsible for any drinking games based on my verbal tics. You could also base one on how many times I say going into a sentence, and that you'd have alcohol poisoning by the end of this. I can't afford to pay for anyone's liver. If you start a drinking game, it's your own fault. The wrestling. The Braun Strowman segment entertained me. It was disappointing that they didn't do more with The Undertaker, which they've been pretty much promising for about a month. Sounds like if we do an Undertaker match, it's going to be that he's going to show up at WrestleMania and John Cena's going to be sitting ringside and The Undertaker's going to pull him into a ring or something. And that's at least a new and entertaining way to do it, I guess. But for all I know, it's going to be John Cena goes as a fan, nothing happens with The Undertaker, and it's just going to be a long build into a match next year. Who knows? It's just disappointing that they haven't locked in that promise yet, and it feels like they should have, and the rest of the show just felt like it was just a show. SmackDown was very similar. It just kind of felt like a show, although they've done a pretty good job building up toward the Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn match. That's got my attention. That should be fun. I want to see the AJ versus Shinsuke match. I want to see that. I think it's going to be a good match. I've never understood the thing that they're doing where they're building up to the match by having those two guys be tag team partners with one another. But I have liked at the end of the last two shows, they've teased each other's finishing moves on one another and haven't done them, and they've kind of backed off the last second. That's been pretty good, but it's just odd that there isn't a clear face and a clear heel. And I guess, especially in a world title situation, I just like the classic heel versus face match, and we don't quite have that. So that's a little bit strange, but I'm still going to enjoy it. You know, it's still going to be a good match. I'm looking forward to, you know, seeing how all that goes and probably talking about it here. That's it with the wrestling, I think, other than to mention that I was very happy to find out that Tony Schiavone's podcast, What Happened When, is going to be continuing. He changed his mind, and he's going to keep doing it because he found out how much it means to his family and his fans and his friends. So that was encouraging to hear. I'm looking forward to many more weeks of What Happened When. That's a great podcast, and you should listen to it if you're an old-school WCW/Jim Crockett Promotions fan. Also kind of cool to know, Tony Schiavone has been doing some commentary for MLW Wrestling. I believe that's Major League Wrestling, which has been sort of an indie promotion. And they're going to be getting some TV time coming up soon. They're going to have their own TV show on a sports network that I actually get on my sports package. So I'm looking forward to that. I think over the summer they're going to launch a show. So I'll watch that, support Tony Schiavone doing commentary. That'll be great to hear. I haven't heard Schiavone do actual commentary for an actual wrestling match in years. So I'm very much looking forward to that. But that's it for TV for the most part. There is one more TV thing that I want to talk about, but let's play a little bit of music first. Spoiler alert, when we come back, we're going to be talking about Jesus Christ Superstar Live, which I watched on NBC this past Easter with my dad. So we'll talk about that when we come back from the break here. Listen close in the background of this next segment. You may hear a very excited dog just outside of my window barking. It's not my dog. I don't know whose dog it is, but it's very excited about something and maybe a little bit angry. Who knows? There's a dog barking, if you can hear that. I'm not a professional, so I'm not gonna work around that. I'm just gonna talk. This past Easter on Sunday, it was kind of a treat. I didn't know that it was on. My dad just switched over to it, assuming that I actually wouldn't be happy that he was doing so. But Dad and I have dinner together every Sunday, and he decided we're gonna watch some of Jesus Christ Superstar Live. I believe NBC is the station that did it. They have been occasionally just doing live musicals. They've done Peter Pan. They've done The Christmas Story. Sound of Music, I think. They've done a few. And for Easter, they chose to do Jesus Christ Superstar, which is one of those things that I've seen a few productions of. I've listened to the soundtrack. I own the soundtrack. I've actually got the soundtrack on vinyl. And it's got some great iconic songs in it, Dad assumed I wouldn't want to watch it, but he was wrong. I did. Once I found out it was a thing, I just didn't know that it was a thing. I didn't know they were doing that. It was a pretty good production, I gotta say. I enjoyed it quite a bit. A lot of people didn't for some reason, but they're the kind of people that if you gave them the moon, they'd wonder where the stars were, you know. Me personally, I had a lot of fun with it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. John Legend played Jesus in this particular production, and he did a pretty good job with it, I thought. I mean, he's not an actor, so it was, I mean, that was apparent. But his voice sounded really good. I've actually, it made me rethink that I'm not a John Legend fan, and it made me rethink that a little bit, in that he's got a much better voice than I've ever given him credit for. It's not that I've ever, like, disliked John Legend, I'm just not that familiar with him. But it made me feel like I maybe need to get more familiar with him. But at the same time, I know he's not going to be singing 70s fuzz rock, so do I really want to? I'm not sure. Maybe I'll go to Spotify, listen to some John Legend to make my decision that way. I thought he did a good job with it. The cat that played Judas did an incredible job. I am sorry, I don't remember his name. I'm told he's the same guy that played Aaron Burr in the production of Hamilton that, House's beatboxing roommate from when he was in rehab was also in. That's Lin-Manuel Miranda. Lin-Manuel Miranda, talented guy. He will always be House's beatboxing roommate to me from when House was in rehab. The guy that played Judas was great. He did a fantastic job with it. And there's fantastic again. You can do a shot. He was really wonderful. He has a great set of pipes and a great look, and he was just a wonderful Judas, which is such a strange thing to say. You're such a good Judas. You're a wonderful Judas. You know what I mean. He did a great job with the part, and he's somebody who. This role should have overnight made him a household name, which unfortunately I don't remember his name, so maybe that's the wrong phrase to use, but I'm looking forward to learning more about him, like for example his name, because he did a really good job. A little bit of stunt casting done with Alice Cooper as Herod, a role that Alice has played in different productions of the show in the past, and I've always wanted to see that, and they did it, and it was great. It was exactly what I thought it would be. He was very Alice Cooper about it, and very, very sort of flashy suit, and sang well, and brought the right, I think, tone to Herod. I thought it was really nice to see Alice do that. I was hoping he would go rogue and do Only Women Bleed, but you can't have it all. A little bit surprised to see on Twitter and the hashtag a bunch of people complaining that the story stops before the resurrection, which it always has. There's never been a production of Jesus Christ Superstar, at least an official one that I'm aware of, that has included any sort of resurrection scene. Sometimes it's hinted at, and I actually think it was pretty strongly hinted at in this production. But it's never a part of the show. It's not a part of the actual piece. Because the piece isn't interested in the religious story of Jesus. It's interested in the sort of, I'm going to say, secular, historical point of it. And you have to touch on the religion if you're going to tell that part of the story. But it focuses on this is the more or less human story of Christ that we can debatably say from history is probably true. That's what Jesus Christ Superstar focuses on, is the intrigue of a person, in some respects an ordinary human, getting to the point that people view him as Messiah, and what does that look like, what does that mean? It's intriguing, even if you don't think that he's God. And that's the story that's being told in Jesus Christ Superstar, is the straightforward, these things are probably historically true, let's take a look at them version of the story. That's that actually really appeals to me. Because the resurrection, look, I'm a Christian person, I'm a God-fearing man, I believe that the resurrection is true. But I can't prove it. Nobody can really prove it. The only source we have on that really as being an authority on the subject is the Bible. And the Bible is only debatably true because as much as you believe it and as much as you believe that it's the true and steady word of God, it may or may not be. And so you can't really prove that the resurrection happened. But you can talk about the things that did happen, and the things that did happen are so remarkable that you are likely to dig a little bit deeper and wonder a little bit more and do a little bit more research if the story appeals to you. The actual semi-provable story of Christ, the parts that we could say, yes, there was this man who gained a lot of followers, there was this man who was viewed as Messiah, who was crucified as Messiah, who was seen as such a threat by the government, such a rallying point for people who thought he was Messiah that the government decided he had to go. That's an intriguing story. So Jesus Christ Superstar looks at that story from the point of view of, well, let's poke at this. Let's see, you know, what is that story? Let's tell that story. And because you can't prove the resurrection, it doesn't talk about the resurrection. It hints at it in places. The production we saw on Sunday, I thought, did a very good job of symbolically pounding you over the head with it, yet people were still complaining that there was no resurrection in it. Christ is on the cross. John Legend is on the cross. And the cross levitates. It lifts up and starts to kind of drift back into a void that also becomes cross-shaped, and then sort of closes around it, and that's the end of the production. I don't know if you caught it in what I just said there. I don't know if you caught it if you saw it. Christ literally rose into the air. He literally rose in this, and people were complaining there was no resurrection. It's symbolic, folks. You got to do a little bit of research on your symbolism. I thought it was very well done, and I thought it was a very good hint toward the resurrection that those who know the story of Christ could see it. Those who don't know the story of Christ might have questions about it and might search a little bit deeper. I actually thought there were some problems with this particular telling. It was it seemed like Pilate just sort of lost his note at toward the end of one of his songs. I don't know what the hanging of Judas was supposed to be. It seemed like they just forgot to hang him because he climbed up to the top of the thing and then a ladder fell and we didn't see any Judas hanging there. It seemed, I don't know if maybe they needed to pull that back for network sensors or what, but it was just sort of, well, so did he die or what was that? You know, it was heavily implied that he was going to hang himself, but you didn't actually see it. So it was kind of, you know. But I get it if it was a censor thing or if they just didn't want to risk actually hanging a guy on live television. I could see where they wouldn't do it. The other one that was puzzling was during the 40 lashes, the flogging segment, John Legend was tied up to a thing and we heard whipping noises and the number of lashes being counted out, but nobody was actually doing any whipping. People were running by occasionally and kind of tapping on, like, his arms or something, but, like, nobody was, there was clearly nobody doing any whipping. And I wondered about that, but I think I might know what was going on there. John Legend is, of course, a person of color, and I hope that the reason that that scene was a little bit confusing was because somebody had the good sense to realize that they've got a person of color in the lead role on a network television thing on Easter Sunday, and they didn't want to whip him. I hope that that was the thought process there, because that's all I can think of that makes sense, and good God, does that make sense? Like, there's a connotation there that you don't want to spark in people's minds, so maybe that was what was behind it, but it was a little bit strange, and it felt like it could have been handled a little bit differently and still gotten the message across, but it was, I think I get it on that one. All in all, I thought it was a very good production. I had a lot of fun with it. I really enjoyed it, and I've had the songs stuck in my head all week, and I've been listening to the classic soundtrack of it as a result. The brown cover vinyl record that everybody has in their collection that's a musical fan. The one with Ian Gillan, also from Deep Purple, as Jesus. That's that one. I've been having a lot of fun listening to that. I forgot how good Ian Gillan's voice was in the 70s. He still does a pretty good job. I saw him with Deep Purple last year, and he still does a pretty good job, but he's a little bit more gruff, and I just forgot how good his voice was in the 70s, and it's been fun hearing him be Jesus for a few days. The distracting thing about the original album is Caiaphas. I've always said Caiaphas. I don't recall what they say in the play now, or I just say it that way, but Caiaphas. The role of Caiaphas, played by a gentleman named Victor Brox, I'm unfamiliar with him, other than he's the guy on the Jesus Christ Superstar album. There's no way they could have known it. This isn't anybody's fault, but listening to the classic Jesus Christ Superstar album, that guy's voice happens to sound exactly like the Brain from Pinky and the Brain. So much so that I had to look at the record sleeve to confirm that it wasn't Maurice LaMarche, and Maurice LaMarche is just a lot older than I thought he was. That's a different guy. He just happens to sound exactly like the Brain, and I can't not hear it. Like, all I've been able to think when I've heard his voice on the recording this past week is, what are we gonna do tonight, Brain? Same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to kill Jesus. I can't not hear it. I'm so sorry, because I probably am going to ruin that for somebody else who loves that album. But it's so close. It's so exactly the same voice. But it's funnier this way. But I don't think that's what they were going for. In general, I had a lot of fun with the show. I've been having a lot of fun listening to the album. That's been the main thing I've been listening to this week, so that's why I don't have a lot of music to talk about. Jesus Christ Superstar was a lot of fun. Go see a production of it sometime if you get the chance. It's always worth it. Personally, I know there are a lot of Christians that have a problem with it. It doesn't show the resurrection. It focuses only on the human side of Jesus. It doesn't do this, it doesn't do that. It changes some of the narrative a little bit, as though everything about Jesus doesn't. As though the Gospels don't change the story of Jesus, as though they're not inconsistent with one another. I understand all of the criticisms of the work from Christians, but I've got to say, what I saw on Sunday night and what I've seen in theaters before in the past, I thought that was a lot more reverent and a lot more worshipful and a lot more polished than most of the Christian bands I've seen. It's funny how secular things often treat religion better than religion does. Which actually leads me to, I'm just going to sort of dovetail into something else. That got me thinking about other secular works based on Christ that are interesting. And I wanted to share a few of them with you, because I really like Jesus Christ Superstar, and I think you should check that out if you haven't. But there's a whole bunch of Jesus stuff out there made by people who we would not think of as Christian witnesses. Many of the things that I'm about to talk to you about, in fact, are seen as blasphemies or heresies, but they're things that have been important to me as someone who likes Jesus but wish he had a better budget to make a better product. I kind of enjoy it when a secular person or group or whatever tells some of the story. I'm a big fan of The Last Temptation of Christ, Scorsese's thing, which I absolutely understand why people find that blasphemous. It's because it's blasphemous. But I like the point it was making, the message I walked away from Last Temptation of Christ with was, okay, so Christ really was tempted in every way, just as we are, which is scriptural. It's graphic, it's upsetting, it's inappropriate in places, but I enjoyed it, and I liked the point that I feel it was making. I liked the kind of greater message and greater idea of it. And spoiler alert on a 40-year-old movie or whatever, eventually Christ gets back on the cross, you know, so I don't have any problem with that. I think it was an interesting look at what if Jesus was tempted. You know, what if Jesus had been fallible? You know, that was an interesting take on it in Last Temptation of Christ. And I'm not going to talk about the Passion of the Christ other than to say it doesn't count on this little list I'm making here, because Passion of the Christ was meant to be a fairly faithful retelling of the gospel, although it took liberties with it too, and yet you'll show it in your church. In fact, I think the liberties that it took are worse than the liberties that Jesus Christ Superstar takes, but whatever. Jesus Christ Superstar, you could show in a church and then follow up the conversation by talking about the resurrection. But, you know, God forbid churches have any sense. Last Temptation, I really enjoyed. There are countless bands who have done songs about Jesus that you wouldn't expect to have come from that band. The Velvet Underground has a beautiful song called Jesus that I find very inspirational. Big Star has a great song about Jesus that is very moving to me. It's sort of Big Star's Christmas song, and I like that one a lot. There are countless others. I mean, listen to any country artist. Johnny Cash does some great stuff about Jesus, but Johnny Cash is known to be a witness for Christ, so that kind of doesn't count either. There are tons of music out there that is about Jesus that you won't hear done in a church, but maybe you should. Velvet Underground song and Big Star songs are the first two that come to mind. I love those songs quite a bit. I'm even going to talk about Kevin Smith's Dogma. Dogma, I think, does a great job of looking at the gospel and the impact that it could have on the modern world. It's more end of days type stuff or whatever, but I like the way Christ was used at the center of that movie. I thought it was irreverent, but appropriately so. People have a problem with irreverence, man. They have a problem with laughing at your beliefs, at your own beliefs. this past week on Easter Sunday, I'm not going to lie to you folks, I didn't go to church on Easter because I'm between churches, and I didn't. It walking into somebody's church on Easter Sunday feels like you're committing, you know? It feels like you've proposed. So I didn't go to church on Easter Sunday. And I posted in my Facebook status, slept in. So did Jesus see his shadow or whatever? And you would not believe the private messages I got from people who were concerned for my soul because I made a joke about Jesus. Get over it. They're my beliefs. I can make a joke about them. If you can't make a joke about your own beliefs, you shouldn't be allowed to have them. And Kevin Smith's Dogma does a great job of making jokes about what are his beliefs, or at least were at the time. I can't speak for him now, but at the time he very much had a religious portion to his life that I don't think a lot of people understood went into making Dogma. I like that movie a lot. Alice Cooper. Let's talk about Alice Cooper. I was already talking about music. Alice Cooper's stage show has for decades been a morality play. I say that and people think I'm full of crap, but it's the absolute truth. Throughout Alice's, the theme of every show is throughout the show, Alice goes on a rampage and does all these dirty, evil things, and is just he's a bad boy, and he's a very bad boy, and he gets to the end of the set and is in some way executed. Last time I saw him, it was with a guillotine, and he comes back after the execution in a white tux and does a big rock show party thing, usually doing Under My Wheels and stuff like that, and it's just fun to go out on. He's regenerated into a white tux. The symbolism is clear there. He does terrible things, dies, and is reborn. Does that sound like any stories you've read in the Bible? Sounds like every damn one of them to me. And so Alice Cooper's stage show has been a Christian morality play for years. He's the son of a preacher. He knows what he's talking about. Alice Cooper is a devout Christian and always has been. I tell people my favorite Christian album is Alice Cooper's Brutal Planet. Listen to it sometime. That's a Christian album. And a very, very good one. Alice Cooper's whole career is a Christ allegory, and he does a brilliant job with it and doesn't get the credit just because it's a little bit trashy looking, the way it should be. Because the gospel isn't pretty, folks. The gospel is an ugly, ugly thing. There's execution, death, blood, propitiation, all that. That's not pretty. And we keep making these ornamental crosses, these beautiful crystal and wooden crosses that sit on your desk at work and are so nice and so pretty. The cross was an instrument of torture and death and execution, and we've made it too beautiful. The gospel needs some ugliness in it, because the gospel, as beautiful as it is incredibly ugly as well. I think Alice Cooper does a good job of painting it in allegorical form. I'd sure rather listen to him than DC Talk, anyway. And then on the less reverent side, you've got the movie Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter, which is absolutely real. I'm not making that up. That is a real movie. I have watched it, and I'm no better. Although the theology in it really isn't that bad, to be honest with you. I can't say I recommend it, but I recommend it. Track down Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter. It's great. Jesus has a buddy who fights evil with him, and that buddy is El Santo, the Mexican wrestler. And it's one of the worst things I've ever seen. But check out Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter sometime. The theology really isn't that bad. In the comic book world, you've got the comic punk rock Jesus, which is about a group that gets together and decides they're going to clone Jesus using DNA from the Shroud of Turin. And they're going to broadcast his life on TV, which has religious parties split on how they feel about that. The kid grows up a little bit, and of course, because he hates being watched all the time and he hates what he is to everybody, he becomes a punk rock star. And and you see the social rebellion and stuff that comes from that. It's a good read. It came out in, I think, 2013. It was in the era when I was still collecting individual issues, and I think that would have been 2012, 2013, somewhere in there. It's a good read by Sean Murphy, I think. I didn't even have that written down on my list. It just came to mind, and I spat it out there. I'm sort of proud of myself. Punk Rock Jesus is a good read. I like when the secular world takes on the story of Christ, because it's usually much better done and much more moving than what happens when the Christian world takes it on. Christian culture is so weird, man, and so low budget and so hokey, and so everybody's gotta feel good all of the time. You gotta, leave them with a smile, that kind of nonsense. I like when the secular world takes it on and makes it as gritty and as strange and as irreverent as it can be, because that's, the gospel is such an out of control story that it almost needs a secular mind to make it make sense. I feel that most preachers and Christian authors and stuff, Brennan Manning is an exception to this. Brennan Manning is fantastic. I feel like most preachers and Christian authors and stuff get so bogged down in how things look and making things look holy and making things look, clean cut and get so bogged down in word studies and in context and so on and so forth that they sometimes lose the message and lose what speaks to people in the message. For all the wanting to get back to the Bible that you hear people talk about in the church, so few of them actually do, because if you want to tell the story of Jesus, you've got to tell a really, really ugly, really upsetting story that I feel like Hollywood does a better job of telling than Billy Graham does. Oh, did. Pardon me. Billy Graham passed away. Because unfortunately, it feels like Hollywood is trying to tell the story and show it some respect, and it sounds like most of the preachers you see on TV are just heretics. Anyway, that's my two cents on Jesus, I guess. that's just a handful of Jesus things. I feel like I'm forgetting something major. I feel like I haven't talked about some Jesus-based secular thing that is probably sitting on one of my shelves somewhere here in the house. But whatever I missed that was a big one, let me know about it. Leave me a comment somewhere. Catch me in person. text me, send me a link to my MySpace page. I don't have a MySpace page. No one does. But you know, in some way, let me know what your favorite secular Jesus thing is. Passion of the Christ doesn't count. It just doesn't. Even though it was made by Mel Gibson, it doesn't count. And I'm also not gonna. I refuse to acknowledge The Shack, which was a big deal last year. I refuse to acknowledge that. I don't want to talk about anything that Kirk Cameron has to say. I don't have time to talk about God's Not Dead. The case for Christ is not worth my time. Neither is I Can Only Imagine. Only talk to me about secular Jesus from now on. I'm going to have a lot more fun, and frankly, so will you. That said, there is a lot of Christian stuff I do enjoy. I mentioned Brennan Manning. I love his writings. There's the occasional band that I'll like, but it's usually somebody on the indie scene. The only two bands that are immediately coming to mind, of course, have broken up, and they're Madison Green and Tree by Leaf. I loved both of them. Over the Rhine is still doing stuff. I like Over the Rhine a lot. I'll check out anything they do. There are probably others, but I don't spend a lot of time with Christian music either. If you know what I'm missing that I clearly should have mentioned in this, please just let me know, is the banner point of this outgoing part. Otherwise, I guess we're about ready to put a bow on this one, or maybe put three nails through it. I'm sorry, that felt wrong. That felt wrong while I was saying it. I'm sorry about that one. But we're at the end of the show, is what I'm saying. I enjoyed doing this. I enjoyed talking about Jesus stuff and getting mad about it. I haven't gotten to do that in a while. Looking forward to doing more of that one of these days soon. Little bit of a short episode this week, but I don't think anyone's going to complain about that. I probably need to do some shorter episodes every now and again. They do better on the downloads, for those of you who are wondering about my metrics. I'll have more stuff to talk about next week and a greater variety of stuff. This was just kind of a weird, slow week for my pop culturing. So sorry about that, but I hope you had some fun hearing me rant about Jesus for a little while. If not, maybe next week I'll rant about somebody else's God. Until then, I hope everybody had a good Easter and is having a good Passover and has plenty of jelly beans and stuff. I'll talk to you next time. I really appreciate your interest in the show, and check out all the links I said, although I don't think I'm going to have a whole lot on this week's episode on the blog, but most weeks I do. Thanks. I'll talk to you next time. That's not what I say. Check us out next time. That's it. Check us out next time. Thanks a lot. Bye. Life of Brian. I should have mentioned Life of Brian.